Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Good Morning Pride. My name is Eric Schlitt. As always, I am welcoming in another member of Pride of Detroit. It is Monday morning, episode 6, draft week, and we have a new special guest today from the Pride of Detroit team, Miko Scott. Miko is our content creator over on YouTube. He did a video that he recently, the profiling Kool-Aid McKinstry, and that's up in article form over on the website. You can go to the YouTube Pride of Detroit YouTube channel, and Miko is all over that. And I know we're starting to expand into other social media platforms and whatnot, but it's a roller coaster ride having Miko with us this past year. It's been a lot of fun. He's really expanded our reach and created a whole variety of new things. You take the lead over there on YouTube, but you bring Morgan Cannon in as well. Morgan was our guest on episode 4, and you guys do some great videos over there together. But really, Miko, I don't know how much people really know about you because let me back up. First of all, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. No, I was listen. I was enjoying being hyped up. I don't get to be a guest on most people's podcasts, so like
Yeah.
hearing someone say nice things about me was like a nice little welcome change.
Well, I tell you what, as we're sitting here, I'm seeing you turn your lights on and stuff like that, and I'm thinking, oh man, I don't know if I have the heart to tell Miko that this isn't video. Like, you don't have to turn the lights on. It's okay. You can turn those studio lights off. And you look good as it is, but you don't have to look good for my podcast, because I am just bumming around.
Yeah, I didn't want to just like be sitting here in shadow and just like have you talking to like a silhouette of me as if like this is some sort of like interrogation and I
Nice.
didn't want my identity. But no, man, I'm super happy to be here. This past year with Pride Detroit has been honestly a dream come true for me. You obviously already know, and I'm sure like any of your audience who has gotten to see me on YouTube or see me pop in on the POD channel, whether it's Twitch or something, kind of already knows. Like I've been a huge supporter of you guys. You guys really, I feel like POD is the standard when it comes down to what it should look like if you're going to run a fans blog, if you're going to try to cover a team. And obviously you and Jeremy, kind of being, leading the charge in that regard, really kind of helps set a really high standard. So super excited to be here. I will try to not be super long-winded so that your, audience can maybe enjoy two episodes. If I'm lucky enough to be on two, they can at least enjoy more content and not just have to hear me ramble, for too long.
I tell you what, the number one thing that I have heard recently is that the audience does not care how long these podcasts are, because my goal originally was to keep these about 30 minutes or less, and then I am extraordinarily long-winded. And so these podcasts have been going longer and longer. It started out with Ryan. We went like 37 minutes, and then we did another one with like 38, 39 minutes. And then I did one with Morgan, and it was, or I did another one with Ryan and went a little bit longer. And I went with Morgan, it was like 48 minutes. Jeremy was 56, and it's like it gets out of hand really quick. But the audience feedback has said, bring it on. We're ready for long-winded conversations. But I think we have a good focus for today's show. But again, before we jump into that, I know, like, you kind of showed up on YouTube, and I don't know if we ever fully really did like a full introduction, discussion, background with you, like, because you just kind of jumped in. I know we did a welcome to the team article, but it's just an article. And then really, you've been the host of everything you've pretty much done with us. You did a couple of podcasts, right, where you were a guest, but
Yeah.
I don't think we did a full on intro. So I think this is a good setting for us to kind of background, talk about where your interest, maybe came from, to in this market, and then what you did before you joined us, because I think you did some cool things.
Yeah, again, I'll try and be somewhat brief, but I mean, my passion for audio media started all the way back when I was in high school. I took a few courses of radio when I was in high school. And I just kind of fell in love with it. I fell in love with the entire process of putting together a show, talking about, you know, subject matters with my classmates, playing music and things like that. And it was one of the first things outside of playing sports, outside of just, you know, going to regular class, that I actually had a teacher kind of pull me aside and be like, hey, like, you're really good at this. Like, you're really just like naturally talented at this whole, you know, speaking and putting together a show and all that. So after I graduated high school, I went to Spex Howard, which was a broadcasting school out in Southfield. I think it's now kind of been absorbed into Lawrence Tech. But when I went, it was its own little entity. And I went there for radio broadcasting. I wanted to be on the radio. Wasn't quite like sold on sports radio at that time, but I always wanted to be on the radio. I wanted to play music. I wanted to talk. Primarily I grew up in a very Christian home. So like my whole goal was like to get on the radio and to present a different style of radio music that I had kind of grew up in and that I just thought wasn't very well represented. Life took other turns. I took a different turn as far as like, you know, just kind of hitting the ground running pretty quickly, getting married, having kids.
Sure.
And so anyone who was familiar with like the radio broadcasting or just what it takes to get into any kind of broadcasting, whether it's radio or TV, it is not a quick road. It is not as simple as applying, getting hired, and then you're doing that whole thing. You have to intern. There's a long drawn out process. And I just didn't have it. I didn't have the patience for that. I had a wife, I had a baby.
Yeah, responsibilities, sure.
Yeah, I wanted to make money. So fast forward, shoot, almost 10 years, maybe 11 years. Mm-hmm. I got another opportunity with a good friend of mine, Scotty Questions. Him and you
over
know, our good friend John.
Questionable Tees. Yep. Questionable Tees is a awesome place for it. We love them.
Yeah. And so we, you know, Scotty has this amazing vision for Questionable Tees and what it can be as a brand. And out of that, he was like, hey, how about we do a sports podcast? And how about we talk about the Lions? Because me, him, and our good friend John were talking about sports and talking about the Lions all the time. So he was like, oh, well, this just feels like a natural transition. We did that for about 2 years of having our own podcast, having a YouTube channel. And then like this past year, I kind of just decided I wanted to kind of go solo. And so I did that for about, geez, maybe 5 months, maybe not even 5 months before, you know, I was fortunate enough for you and Jeremy to like kind of take notice of the work that I was doing and was just like, hey, would you kind of want to come over and help us out on YouTube? And like I said before, that was a dream come true to have you guys, someone that I hold in such regard, had you guys on as guests, both of you. On separate occasions on the Questionable podcast. And you guys were always so gracious with your time. So the fact that you guys saw something in me to be like, hey, we think he can, you know, add value to what we're already doing. It was just, like I said, a dream come true. I don't know how else to say it. But yeah, that's kind of like the sped up version of where my passion started and how I kind of ended up here. Really quick, I'd also be remiss. You mentioned Morgan.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have, you know, hit my groove as well as I did if it wasn't for the fact of Morgan taking so much of his time to help me out. I honestly, like, he's helped elevate not just my football knowledge, but my ability to create content to a whole nother level because he's just so well-versed in both his football knowledge and just what he's able to bring to any topic that we have.
Hey, Morgan's an incredibly hard worker, and he has goals that he works really diligently towards. He's also a very kind-hearted soul. Don't let the outer image, you know, send the wrong message. Like, this is he may, you know, he's, you know, you may look at his long hair and beard and, you know, get some preconceived notion, but like that's not who. I mean, he is a very kind-hearted, altruistic person in a lot of ways, and he cares. I mean, the dude cares like as much as anybody I've ever seen, and not just like he cares about like everything, you know what I mean? Like, he'll like, yeah. Oh, there's a stray cat outside, let me take care of this cat and nurse it back to health, and, you know, take it to the vet and get it a chat. Like, he's just a very kind-hearted person at his core, and he's, like I said, hard worker, diligent, really wants to get better, really studies to get better. you guys really connected. I think you have a really nice bond over there, a really nice communication platform. You guys are very at ease with each other. And I think with his go-getter attitude and your background, it really made a really nice marriage of voices over there at YouTube. So like, yeah, I think it's a great marriage. If I peel back the curtain a little bit more, you were, when Jeremy and I were on the podcast separately, but when we were on your podcast with Scotty and stuff, like we always felt like we had good interactions with you guys. We also felt, you know, like you had a lot of potential, and when we were looking for alternatives, you were on a very short list of guys, and we felt awkward at one point because we were like, could we ask him to step away from Questionable Tees to like join us? Like that would be rude, you know what I mean? Like, and we didn't want to do that. And then when we heard, you know, hey, you wanted to go solo, we were like, okay, all right, well, if he's branching out, maybe he would be interested in. But the way that the timing of things work, like we can only hire at certain points.
Yeah.
We had to wait a couple of months before we got the window. And once we got in that window, you were the first phone call. We were like, all right, hey, look, we want to go down a different avenue and we think you can take us there. And it's been sensational. It really has. I've really been super happy with how it's gone. I know Jeremy is as well. And so we're very excited to have you on board. And the stuff that you and Morgan put out is, like I said, really terrific. And I don't think enough people, you know, have found their way over, right? Like, I think you have a very big audience.
Yeah.
Right? But I think it's growing and it should continue to grow because more and more people should jump on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that I love so much about what Morgan and I are doing, or even what I'm doing solo at times, is I love the process of it. I honestly genuinely just love creating things, and I love talking about this team. I love being able to have a platform that, again, I think you guys helped elevate my voice to a level that I think people work really hard to get to. And so I'm always grateful for the fact that you guys helped, you know, boost my voice. But I do. I love the process. I love just everything that I'm able to do, or that Morgan and I are able to do together to create, you know, unique content has been fun. But I agree with you. I mean, I'm always hoping for more. I'm always hoping to get more views. Sure. I'm always hoping to help, you know, get our voice out there more, because I think whether it's myself, whether it's Morgan, or any of the other members on staff, like, there's a lot of unique perspectives, right? We're not, yeah. I know some people sometimes look at whether it's Pride of Detroit or any single entity and think like, oh, well, they all must think the same. And it's like, no, we all have very unique perspectives and viewpoints on things. And that's what I love about, again, having, you know, whether it's a YouTube channel, a podcast, it's really just like one opinion. And it's hopefully us being able to share that with a group of people that probably have never thought the same way we thought. And maybe there's a couple people here and there that do. But for the most part, it's you know, being able to use a platform to connect to so many different people.
I think like I said, the opportunity for growth is there. And the more people that find out about it, you know, the more it goes. Like, look, I have people who have followed me on Twitter for a decade and are just, and even recently are like, I didn't know you had a podcast. And I'm like, every week for, well, for the most part, every week for like 10 years, but that's okay. That's okay. Like, you know, we always stumble on information in different ways. And so, yeah, it's great. All right. I think we should move on to actual football talk here, though.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm getting a little uncomfortable talking about myself. So it's a little...
well, let's talk a little more then. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So, before we jumped on air, we talked about the fact that we wanted to talk about basically the advantages or disadvantages of drafting different positions, either early or late. Like, some positions you look at and you have to take them in the first round in order to get the right value. Yeah. Some positions you have to, you can wait a little bit, maybe only through the first like 2-3 rounds. And then after that, there's a pretty significant talent drop off. I think most positions work like that. But then there's other ones where maybe you have more specialist type roles where you can wait and try and find a specific guy that fits a specific need and or maybe a guy that you think has potential, but you know, the to develop down the road. Like, for example, Derek Barnes was drafted in the fourth round because he was viewed as a guy with potential to start down the road because he had a high ceiling with a lot of athleticism and intelligence. And sure enough, that came to fruition. Amon-Ra was also drafted in the fourth round right before Derek Barnes, but he was brought in with the mindset of he's a guy who's sliding because it's a really deep class. He didn't test very well. And, you know, he's kind of being overlooked and we can get this guy who we think can contribute more quicker. So at receiver, a guy in the fourth round maybe, you know, works because of the position, because of the depth of the class, whatever. At linebacker, you may take a guy on day three that can give you some short term or, you know, stability or like Malcolm did, or maybe some long term upside like Derek Barnes. But typically you're not going to find immediate starters like all the time at linebacker. Even when you draft them in the first round, look at Jack Campbell, right?
Yeah.
Like so different positions have different, and then different, the depth of different classes, like really play factors into when you can wait or when you have to strike early. And I think the position I'd like to start talking about first, because I think the difference there is very vast, is edge. If you look at edge, if you look at like the top edge rushers in the league, almost all of them have been drafted in the first round, and almost not just the first round, but like the top half of the first round. And there's typically almost a direct correlation to the earlier you take an edge rusher, the more successful they are. Now there are oddities like, or rarities, yep. I should say, like Max Crosby. Right. Like Max Crosby took off. He was a fourth round already, but he's the anomaly. He's the Amon-Ra St. Brown of edge rushers. Like, you know, guy you get in a fourth round, it turns out to be unreal. Most of the time though, the earlier you take them, the better. And I think with this class in particular, it's a little bit more unique because it doesn't have that elite guy that you're taking in the top five. But there is a lot of like muddled up talent that all kind of congests together. And so let's talk about that. Like your opinions on my philosophy of having it, the earlier you take them, the better. And, or if you want to talk about jump into a guy, either one, wherever you want to start.
No, I'm right there with you. I think the ability to identify the quality of this edge class is very evident by how we start talking about guys like Jared Verse and Dallas Turner. And when you start to kind of sit back and listen to how draft analysts talk about these guys, it's not that they're not top 10 guys, right? Jared Verse or Dallas Turner, one of those guys could go in the top 10.
Certainly.
But like you said, the best of the best in most edge classes, those are top five guys. We're talking about a guy being picked, you know, somewhere between, honestly, you know, obviously this is a really good quarterback class. But in theory, like, we should be talking about maybe an edge going at four or five or somebody trading up into that range to get one of these edges. Instead, we're talking about, again, like I said, Verse or Turner possibly sliding to the back end of the top 10 and more than likely not getting picked until the teens. And it's really just those two guys. And then everyone else that you hear talked about is like fringe first round. You know, a guy like Chop Robinson is very volatile in terms of like people love him or people absolutely, you know, are just like, no, that's a day two pick.
Yeah, certain. Let me ask you about what about Latu? You have Latu closer to the first group or closer to the second group?
Latu is definitely closer to the first group. I think obviously he has some questions as well. And I think when you hear people talk about Latu, it feels like it has to be the team that has like the most buy-in on him. Because he's technically sound as far as skill set, as far as his ability to have a wide array of pass rush moves, all of those things. But he probably has one of the scarier injury histories of this draft class. You know, whenever you step away from football for a time, especially yep. due to a head injury or multiple head injuries.
Yeah.
That gets you looked at a certain way. But his talent, his skill set is still someone that probably gets picked, you know, somewhere in the middle of the first round, at worst mm-hmm. at the back end of the first round.
Yeah, I think like that neck head injury that he had that caused him to medically retire from Oregon. Was it Oregon before? Then yeah. Oh no, Washington.
Yeah, I believe Washington. No, Washington. Yeah. Yes.
So he medically retires from Washington. He takes a year. I think it was just one year, and then goes to UCLA, gets and you know, feels better, feels like he's you know, in better shape medically, gets cleared, plays 2 years at UCLA, and is in the conversation as you know, one of the top three edge rushers in this class. And I think you could argue from a talent standpoint, maybe I think some teams might view him as the top. Not every team, but a couple teams might.
Mm-hmm.
But with that neck injury, there's a lot of medical hurdles you gotta jump to get into that range to be like a guy who's going in the top half of the first round. So I agree. I think he tends to get pushed down a little bit.
At the same time,
I also wouldn't be surprised if someone's like, hey, he's medically cleared and we love him. He's our top guy and we take him at 12 or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, he feels like the kind of guy that if you were to take him, it would be nice if you already have some somewhat established pass rusher, right? Like you're looking for him to be your main, you know, go-getter when it comes down to sack production. You're hoping for, and I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying that he's connected to this team, but like a team like mm-hmm. Pittsburgh, right? You have TJ okay. Watt. You don't necessarily need Latu to come in there and all of a sudden from day one be, you know, a 9-10 sack a year type of guy. He's somebody mm-hmm. that you can kind of, you know, you can monitor his snap production a little bit better, but you can probably still get a lot out of him because you have a monster on the other side in TJ Watt that you know is going to produce for you.
So Jared Verse is out of Florida State's the other guy you mentioned, and Dallas Turner out of Alabama. Turner's, I think, the guy with a higher upside, which tends to make him the more valuable guy. I think Verse is maybe a little bit more pro ready, a little bit more in his arsenal, but, you know, he's more of, you know, I think he can step in. Yeah. I mean, look, Dallas Turner's going to step in right away and he's going to play. He's going to be great. But I think I don't think you're going to get that kind of, I think Burse is a little bit more steady right now. But Turner is the guy with more upside in my mind. And so when you're drafting these edge guys, upside's a huge factor in looking at them. Right. And so with Latu, you're looking at he's medically cleared now, but is that a degenerative injury that could maybe limit his career? And if it is, that lowers his value a little bit. With Verse, you wonder how high his ceiling can be versus a guy like Turner. And if you think Turner's ceiling's higher, then I think most GMs are going to look at that, take that ceiling, higher ceiling guy, as opposed to the guy who's, you know, steady, because that's what you do use the draft for. You use the draft to take those high risers that can, you know, hit the, you know, be a Pro Bowler in a couple of years, as opposed to a guy who, you know, might make a Pro Bowl now and then maybe might not make it back. So I agree. I tend to think they're going to go as early as 9. One of them might go to I think the Bears could be in play for an edge guy. Maybe is Atlanta pick at 8?
I was gonna say Atlanta picks at 8. So Atlanta right. would be, so Atlanta to me is the earliest. Yeah. In my opinion. Yeah.
You got four quarterbacks who are probably going to go. It's crazy. You know, I mean, I thought it was 4 going in top 11. Now it's like 4 going in top 5 almost, the way that's feeling now.
Right.
3 wide receivers, a couple offensive linemen, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, where do you fit this guy in? And then it's just going to have to be like team fit. So inevitably, you're probably going to see all 3 off the board before, let's say, 20. Okay. And then, like you said, it kind of puts you in no man's land. The next guy's Chop. Now, the next 3 in my tier, I think all have question marks, but all have upside too. And that's Chop Robinson, Darius Robinson, and then Marshawn Kneeland from Western. I think all 3 of those guys, you could talk yourself into liking them late in the first round. At the same time, you could also say, no, they're all day 2 guys. Like they're all second rounders, you know? And so that's kind of the situation with them. Now I'm going to tell you, I have Chop as my 4th guy, mainly because of upside. It's really it's an upside thing again. And now in general, it's I think Chop is going to be the guy that most teams are going to look at and say, okay, that's edge four. Because if I can fix him, that's what all NFL coaches think that, right? If I can fix him, man, he'll be awesome. Because those are he has elite skills. They just haven't translated. I have Darius after that because he has skills, but you worry about his ceiling. And I think Neyland is a small school guy who or smaller school guy, I should say, not small school, but who did exactly what you wanted against his level of production. And there's maybe a little bit higher ceiling, but you also have a little bit of questions around can he be an every down guy? And if he's not, then he's probably a day two guy. And so that's kind of my three. I don't know if you have them look at them any differently than that, but
no, that's ideally how I have them. I think the one that I would probably, and I think once you get to Neyland, right, I think there's a good amount of guys that you can start to have conversations about. I think you hear a lot about Chris Braswell, the edge rusher out of Alabama. There's some people that are really, really high on him for similar reasons that you and I are probably high on Chop, right? It's upside. It's, well, if he can put it all together, maybe he can be this really talented edge rusher. You know, then there's guys like Braylon Trice, who I really like out of Washington.
Adisa Isaac, the other Penn State guy, is really good too.
And then Adisa Isaac. Adisa Isaac is one of my favorites. I love Adisa Isaac.
High character kid too.
And specifically, I love Adisa Isaac for the Lions. Like, if, you know, we all know that the Lions have been trying to figure out that Sam position. Adisa Isaac, for me, is like the ideal Sam linebacker for the Lions.
Okay. Now let me pause you before we get too far down this rabbit hole, because I agree with you. I think the Chop, Darius, Neyland tier.
Yeah.
Though that's probably the end of the guys who could be like starters, right? Like in a four-man front, they're a starter. That's probably it. And those three all kind of carry questions. And so now, again, as we're drifting further down the line into the draft, this is what you get with the edge rushers. You're getting, if they're not a surefire starter, they're a second rounder. And if they're a second rounder, you're hoping to turn them into something down the road. You're hoping to get a Josh Pascal in the second round. That's what you're looking at edge rushers. You're looking at the value of edge rusher is, if you start, you go in the first. If you're a rotational guy that has high upside, you go in the second. And that's kind of how I view them. And if you're not, if you're a situational guy, then you go in the third. If you have a situational with upside. And then if you're only like a special teamer with situational contributing, then you're a day three guy. And that's kind of how I think the NFL views these guys. So Chop, Darius, Marshawn are probably like right in that second round tier. Maybe you could talk me in the first round. But when you get into like the Isaacs and the Braswells, I think those guys are Sams in the Lions scheme. And the Sam is a part-time role in the Lions scheme. Yes, you might technically have a starter, but it's not going to be one of the four. Like, you're going to only use them in four-man fronts when you're like in your NASCAR or pass heavy packages. They're not going to be one of your base ends. They're going to be more situational type pass rush guys. So I agree with you. Do you have one of the, do you like Isaac better than Braswell? It sounds like
a lot more. Okay. And let me back up, and then I'll come back to Isaac really quick. Cause what you were saying about like the difference between Chop, you know, Darius and Neyland, when it comes to Chop specifically, like you were saying, I think an argument can be made for all three of those guys, specifically for how they would fit with the Lions. If you are of the opinion that, man, the Lions just need another guy opposite Hutch that can win a one-on-one, that's bendy, that's quick, that's essentially James Houston, but with a higher ceiling, maybe, or maybe even a higher floor, maybe is probably the best way of saying it. That's what makes Chop appealing, because you're just like, man, at the very least, you know, Chop should be able to come into the league and get those one-on-one opportunities and win more than he loses, ideally. And I think
Ideally,
that's what makes,
yes.
that's what makes CHOP appealing to certain people, myself included. Darius, though, is kind of like the other side of that coin, where he's probably like the more traditional, like Lions type of edge player that they've picked the last couple of years, where it's like, you know, he's going to come in and he's, at the very least, he's going to be very good stopping the run.
It's
He's going to start.
it's 2022 John Kaminsky. That's kind of how I like, but that's highly productive in the Lions scheme, right? He was a big contributor in 2022, but he's not the burner. He's not that burner off the edge, right?
He's the guy that you are basically hoping for, somebody that, again, you're probably looking to replace Kaminsky, but you're hoping to get more youth. You're hoping to get a little more juice, ideally, probably from in the middle.
Higher
So
ceiling.
that, yeah. And that's the thing that I like a lot about Darius. And Darius has production. The one thing that kind of Chop gets knocked for is not having the numbers, the sack production. Darius has that. While he was at Missouri, he was highly productive of getting to the quarterback using his size. And when he's on, especially when he's able to use that power, it shows. You can see it on tape. He has powerful hands. He uses his length very well. He does a good job of setting an edge. A lot of things that, like I said, if you're of that mindset, if you're looking at it from like what the Lions typically like, Darius Robinson fits that to a T. And so it's easy to see why, man, the Lions may go that route. And then you get to Marshawn Nyland, and Marshawn feels like Josh Pascal 2.0 to me, like, but just with a healthier, you know, with less injury concerns and things of that nature. So if you really love Josh Pascal, which obviously the Lions do, well, now you just have another one of those, and you can kind of, again, keep that rotation opposite Hutch fairly open with a bunch of guys that you know can play the run, but also get to the quarterback when they have those opportunities, when, you know, opposing offensive lines decide to double an Aleem or a Hutch or now a DJ Reader. You have somebody that ideally is going to be able to win more of those one-on-ones.
I'm with you. If we drop down and we start looking at I'm just gonna describe a few different guys real fast. And if you want to jump in, just stop me. But Isaac and Braswell, I see as kind of like Sam linebackers, right? You mentioned Trice. I see Trice as a Aiden Hutchinson light, and the fact that he's able to produce high volume of pressures, and his motor is relentless, but he's not nearly the athlete that Aiden is. He would be a really good backup to Aiden Hutchinson, but he's not going to be the guy that you want to start opposite of him. I do think he's a great fit, but I don't want to pay a price tag that's over a third rounder for him, in my opinion. You got guys
That's
like Jonah.
fair.
You agree
I was
with
gonna say
that?
that's no, I was gonna say that's fair, because I think that's kind of where Trice, I think, is where most people would feel comfortable. Obviously, the Lions have a slightly later second round pick, so I think if they decided to get him at 61, let's say they went in a different direction at 29, and they decided, like, you know what, we really like Trice, we're not gonna risk it of not getting him in the third, we're just gonna take him in the second. I still think you're getting a highly, I think you're getting a player that's going to contribute, because even with them having Marcus Davenport, even with them having Josh Pascal, both of those guys have had instances where they've missed time. So Braylon Trice would touch the field, and he would be able to be that type of guy that, again, if he proves himself in camp and if he proves to be a capable, you know, player opposite Hutch on pass rushing downs, then he's somebody that you can at least sprinkle in there, and at least you have a more intimidating pass rush than what you currently have.
For the listeners who don't know as much about Trice, I played 753 snaps last year. That was the most of any defensive lineman in FBS. He had 77 pressures. That was the most of any defensive lineman in FBS. He also had another 7 pressures during the playoffs. Lions met with him at the combine. The downside with him is that his athleticism numbers are just, they're just not there. Production's there because his effort's high, and that translates with the Lions. But you need to be a good athlete in order to have sustained success. And I think he lacks a little bit in that department, which is why I kind of see him as more of like a a situational rotational guy, can kind of fill that Romeo Okwara role from last year.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Jonah Ellis, Austin Booker, those are more Sam guys to me. Upside. Now, Booker mostly played with his hand in the dirt. Such a strange career. Never saw like a snap before his senior year. And then all of a sudden is like burst onto the scene and he gives you a 1 year's worth of production, but that's all. And so the question is, where was he before and why couldn't he break out on the field? And so, pretty good athleticism though. It looks like more of an athlete than what he tested, but, it's very interesting to me to see why he's, you know, where was he? Jonah Ellis, Luther Ellis's son, is and brother of I'm blanking on his brother's name, plays linebacker for the Saints. A lot of people like Jonah Ellis, and he's a guy who I think should find his way into day two. And then the other guy that I think could find their way into day two is probably like Gabriel Murphy, the guy who played opposite Latu at UCLA. Mm-hmm. He's a little lighter, so you could talk me into saying maybe he sees a stand-up edge. And he kind of reminds me of Kyle Van Noy in a lot of ways. And so, again, I could see him as like a Sam. And then that's probably it for me at the end of day three or day two there. So,
yeah,
you got anybody else I should have added?
No, I think that's kind of where things start to kind of fall off, right? Like it becomes one of those things where everyone that we've named up to this point, we could see them either at the high end starting, you know, or at least challenging for a starting spot, and at the very least being a heavy rotation guy that could come in, you know, on a NASCAR package, or at least, you know, spelling Hutch or Marcus Davenport and still giving you some quality snaps at that edge position. Once you get beyond that, you really start getting into some heavy development guys. Either just, again, like you're kind of saying, even with Austin Booker a little bit, like where maybe they have some production, but it wasn't consistent, or the level of competition wasn't all that great. And so that's where edge becomes really interesting for me, of how the Lions want to address it, because you know, the motto in the NFL is that you can never have enough pass rushers. And I think that's very true. And I think the Lions could absolutely use some more. They've added some talent to the secondary. They've obviously added DJ Reader. They've added Marcus Davenport. But I still think they could use, I'm of the opinion that they could use a speedster on the opposite side of Hutch. Somebody that could just win quickly. Because that's not always Hutch's game. Obviously, he has mm-hmm. a fantastic spin move that helps him get there quickly. But like you've already kind of illustrated, he's a workhorse. He's going to be relentless and try to get there the hard way if it's necessary.
Yeah.
And I think that's why James Houston was able to be successful his rookie years, because he was just winning quicker than anybody else on that D line. So, you know, like I said, that's kind of why I would lean towards a Chop Robinson if the Lions wanted to address edge. The question just becomes, is Chop that worth that kind of pick at 29? Is he worth that type of investment for a guy that still may be just part of a rotation?
Yeah. Like the thing with Chop is, for me, is you look at his first step quickness and you're like, man, that first step quickness is like top 10 level first step quickness. Mm-hmm. The production though, it screams the Lions won't touch him to me. You know what I mean? Like, but so like that's what tears me up, is like they absolutely could use a guy with an elite first step, and Chop has it. And you're really not going to get that opportunity to draft a guy with that level of first step at 29. He shouldn't be there. And will Brad Holmes overlook the production? I don't know. I don't know, because I can absolutely see him saying the first step is too good to pass up. And then I could also see him saying, why wasn't he productive? And that's a red flag. Like, I could see it go both ways. You know what I mean? That's what makes him such an enigma.
Where do you sit on the Micah Parsons comparisons? Obviously, like comparing draft prospects is a risky thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But
that's a
hefty one for a guy that we're talking about being borderline first round.
Like, I don't like it for a couple of reasons. One, Mike was productive at Penn State. I think the fact that they both went to Penn State and they're both like elite athletes, puts them in that automatic comparison for a lot of people. I don't think he has off the ball skills like Micah had. And like I said, so there's a big difference in production, a big difference in off the ball. Micah's ability to play off the ball is what makes him, I think, such a unique guy. I just don't see Chop being that. Or at least if it's there, I haven't seen it. And maybe, you know, the Lions can look at him and say, hey, we can do more and we can do a lot of these things. But like for me, I think he's more of like a hand in the dirt type of guy personally. And maybe you stand him up, but he's always going to be a guy that I think you're going to want pass rushing. You're just not a guy that you're going to drop and I think that is going to limit him to being like an edge rusher as opposed to like a guy you can play all over the place.
Yeah. And that is one of the reasons why like Adisa Isaac stands out to me a little bit more so. Like if Chop isn't like your flavor of the month and you're just like, okay, but you want somebody that has that athletic profile and has some production. The guy that played opposite of him was doing that. Adisa Isaac was out there going and getting production and putting the numbers and putting stats in the box sheet or in the box score. But I do think there is a realm where Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell could look at Chop and being like, but he's a football player. You know, like if we give him a task, if we give him a responsibility,
right,
and essentially you look at it as like, hey, we're still grooming him, we're still building him up. I think Chop could find a role where it's like, listen, you're gonna come in here. At the very least, we're expecting you to rush the passer. And we're going to work and we're going to hammer it into you the importance of defending the run, setting an edge. Because I agree with you. I do think there's an element of this where it's like, can you pass on this type of skill set if it falls to you?
That's a
right.
I think that's a $1 million question, right?
Yeah. Cause if it falls into your lap and you're not having to spend extra capital to go up and get a guy like Chop, I do think it's worth the investment, again, barring what else the draft board looks like. I mean, again, this regime is very big on drafting the best football players. And that's one of the things where it's like, I think Chop still, regardless of where you may feel he is as a edge rusher, I don't know if it's hard to argue. I think it's hard to argue that he's not a bona fide football player, though. That he's not a guy that you can line up between the lines and expect him to give 110%.
Yeah, I think he's still so young too, right? Like he started at Maryland and Maryland tried using him at Mike and he didn't fit well at Mike. And that's why he transferred to Penn State and they played him more on the edge and he was a rotational guy as a sophomore. Still, I think was like a honorable mention, Big Ten nominee, Big Ten honorable mention, even as a rotational player. And then as a junior was really his only year starting. So there's still a lot of opportunity for growth in him. And like I said, the first step quickness, the athleticism, those are rare traits. And so I could see it. I could see the Lions saying, we don't have a guy like Chop. Now I know I said this when in my write-up of him and everybody yelled, we have James Houston. I know James Houston, people want to make that comparison and yes, there will be some overlap, but I don't see James is never going to be a guy who pushes his hand in the dirt and rushes. Chop, that's what Chop's going to do. Like most of the time, yes, they can both stand up and pass rush. Yes, they both have really good quickness. Yes, they both can both bend, but like Chop's a guy I think who's going to move more towards the line of scrimmage, whereas James is, they're trying to teach him how to play off the line of scrimmage. So they have some overlap in their game, but they're not the same to me. And they don't have that bender like you mentioned earlier.
And I think at some point in time as a fan base, we have to be honest and ask this question. And I'm not saying it's a for sure thing when I say this, but I do think we have to at least ask it in a serious manner. Is there a likelihood that James Houston peaked? That rookie year is as good as he'll ever be?
Yeah, because, no, it's a good question.
Because I don't think, I agree with you in the sense, I don't think he's ever going to be this hand in the dirt guy. I don't think, I think that's the transition to Sam is kind of a forced one, just so that they can find other opportunities to get him on the field. Whereas with Chop, like we've already kind of said it a few times here, that ceiling is like, hey, if you can probably develop him into a Pro Bowl caliber player, and at the very least, you have a very talented pass rusher, I think, at the floor. So like, I don't think we can compare the two. I do think they're drastically different players in who they are currently and who they could be in the future as well.
And look, there he James Houston wants to play off the ball, and he wants to learn off the ball, and they're trying to teach him off the ball. Those are all things that they're trying to do from both of those both sides. Both the Lions and James want to learn how to play off the ball. The problem is he's just it's slow. It's slow going. Like I'm not trying to badmouth him because I like James and I think he's got a lot of potential in an edge
Same,
rusher role.
same, yeah.
The way that coaches talk about him, they're constantly looking for more, and they want him to be able to expand his game, and he's kind of been stuck. And then that injury really just put a pin in his development. And can he get back there? Will it take him longer to recover? Will he come into camp in football shape because he had so much time off and he worked his way back, but he really was only active for one game. And so there's some questions around him. And I think if he ends up being your Sam, it could be very awesome. Like it could be very highly productive. At the same time, based on what I'm hearing from the team and based on what they say in press conferences when we ask him questions, is they think James Houston needs to prove himself more. And if they think that, then they could be in the market to add a guy who plays who has some overlap to what James Houston does. And so, I if you wanted
And I
to
think that's
find a
why
tr no, go ahead.
That's why Ed, I was gonna say that's why Edge is a need, is considered a need by so many people for the Lions, right? Is because there are guys like it's not like the room is bare. It's not like it's Aiden Hutchinson and no one else in the room. It's just no one else currently has played to that level. James Houston did for a season, right?
Half a season.
For half a season, right? Went out there and put up great production. And I think that's my fear for him as a fan is that's why I said earlier, there we have to ask that uncomfortable question of like, has he peaked? Because I think everyone looks at James Houston and just thinks that, like, oh, he's just scratching the surface. And that is possibly true too. But there's a part of me that's just like, after the season that he had, after hearing how, to your point, how coaches were talking about him in training camp this past season before he got hurt. It did not sound like a guy that they were just like, oh no, we expect him to pick up back where he left off. It was a lot of like, no, James has got to prove that that's who he can be consistently.
It's such like when you look at the Lions edge situation, they have five edge rushers that I think all make the roster. The issue it becomes you have Aiden who's a stud. Opposite of Aiden, you have Kaminsky Pascal, who are both they're not pure edge rushers. They're edge setters and interior pressure guys, and they can give you some pass rush, but they're mostly like down ends. Then you have, I always forget the guy that they just acquired, a Davenport,
They
because
have
like
Davenport, yeah.
I totally forget that like he's even on the team, but like Davenport and Houston are going to be, I think, more situational guys, and they both will bring that pass rushing element. Problem is that both of them had injuries that put them on IR last year. Both of them were
Yeah.
in contract years. And so it makes total sense to consider bringing in more depth, bringing another challenger in to see what they can do. And that's I agree. That's why edge become is very much a potential need or in the minds of the Lions and why they could absolutely invest in one. And yeah, the earlier you take them, I think the just kind of looking back at this, like the earlier you take them, the more likelihood you have of them finding success,
Yes.
and that's it's a very it seems like it's a very clear pattern for me. And you typically have the better athletes, you typically they have more production and they and everything kind of fits together. And you have a couple guys at the in this class that can do that. Like you have two guys at the top. Then you start adding in all these intangibles that cause you to have a question mark. And that's kind of the crux of this class is there's a whole bunch of question marks around guys, or they're situational, or they're they're day three guys who are going to be most special teamers. Like there's a lot, we didn't talk about day three guys, but there's a lot of day three guys that I like that I'll talk about later when I do my draft preview show. But like there's talent in this class. It's just not like it's not at the level of classes we've seen before. So finding that right guy, it's going to be a little bit tricky, and they may all come with like some question marks, because I don't think they're going to get one of the top two.
I think that's kind of what I kind of become a little concerned about is that if the Lions decide not to address a position like edge, they don't decide to do in the first round, which again, I don't think they have to. I think there's a very strong likelihood that they don't address edge in the first round. And I would be fine with it. I'm like, okay, cool. I'd be like, fine. There's some quality players, on day two. Some that I'm a little bit higher on, and some that I'm not. But if it goes beyond the third round, I start to sit back and being like, well, maybe they're just happy with what they have, because from the fifth round on, you're kind of in Broderick Martin territory, in my opinion, where
Certain,
you're finding projects. You're gonna find a project that ideally has, whether it's the height, the athleticism, or maybe was just really productive, but maybe doesn't have like the athletic profile to really be like a for sure thing. That's where you kind of get into that realm. And at that point in time, where we're talking about, okay, well, hey, how much is this person going to contribute on special teams first and foremost?
Certainly. All right. We've been talking for a while, so I don't want to spend too much time like going as in depth on some of these other positions, but let's talk maybe about one or two other ones that were Lions have big needs. And just kind of generalize, let's look at receiver. I think there's a bunch of receivers at the top that are like plug and play guys, high level profile guys. Then there's another group of guys after that are on the fringe, for the first, there's probably four guys going in the first round automatically. There's probably another three or four guys that are like fringe first rounders that you could talk yourself into because they could come and start right away. There's probably then another four, five, six, seven guys after that that you're looking at probably in round two that you're saying, man, these are guys that could probably start and we get them in round two, but they're just not going to be elite guys right off the bat. They're going to be guys you grow, but they're going to contribute right off the bat. So now we're talking about, I don't know, like what's that, like 14 guys, right? When you get into third round, now it's can you get a starter or is this guy going to be like a rotational guy, right? Like that's kind of how I see. And then, but then again, you've probably got like another like seven guys that you're talking about in that range. And then after that, now you're in day three. And when you're in day three, now you're talking about more reserve role guys. But maybe those third rounders you can get like rotational snaps out of, like where they split snaps with another guy on your roster to fill a starter role. They're not necessarily going to jump off the right into training camp as kind of a starter level guy, but they can work their way into it and then eventually do it like Amon-Ra did during his rookie year, where he eventually takes over a starting role in like the back half of the season or something like that. And that's kind of how I view it. So I kind of look at it like seven in each round, like seven in the first that's elite, seven in the second that can start, seven in the third that can rotationally start. Very different than edge, right? Like, yeah, like very different way to look at the wide receivers.
Well, yeah, because and I think it's also because, again, you can break down edge differently. We kind of did a little bit with edge where it's like you have your every down guys, you have your pass rush specialist, you have your Sam linebackers. Receiver, I think, is even more specific because you have X's, you have slots, you have Z's, you have smaller slots, big slots, like it becomes even more granular. You have, your
Sure.
speedsters that are X, whatever the case may be. And for the Lions, they're going to go into this draft, at least on paper, with a need at an X. So like, even with the seven that you're talking about per round, it's a little bit tougher because it's like, okay, of those seven, how many of them are true X wide receivers? You know?
Now,
And
let me. I'm
who's
gonna
moonlighting here and there?
let me pause you. Do you are you of the mindset that they have to get a bigger body type guy to contribute on the opposite side, or do you think maybe they could take a guy like Ladd McConkey, and even though he's undersized, and just be like, let's just get every run everybody open. And make the defenses try and cover these guys that are almost uncoverable and just not have a big body? Or do you think like the Lions need to find that big body to keep defenses honest, especially over the middle? Or I mean, what's your opinion on that?
I do think they need a big body, and maybe it is just an old school mindset, and it's
Sure.
not necessarily for moving the football up and down the field. It's honestly once you get into that red zone area. And obviously, we know the Lions would love to run the football, and they are great at
Sure.
doing that. So they're
Sure.
obviously they would be perfectly happy running the football once they get into the red zone. But it would be nice if you had that option of a guy that you're just like, you know what? We're here. Let's say we're at the 7, 8 yard line. We need to throw a fade to somebody. They currently don't have anybody on this roster that they can
Yeah.
do that with, right? I
That'd
mean,
be
like
tough.
Sam a
That'd be
little
tough,
bit.
man.
You know, it's a lot of like quick outs whenever the Lions kind of get into the red zone, or you're hoping that somebody can get open in the back of the end zone type of stuff. But there's not a jump ball guy on this roster. And so I do feel like it'd be nice to have. And I also do kind of become a little concerned that if you go with a guy like Ladd McConkey, right? Another slot receiver or another guy that primarily, I said slot receiver, but somebody who primarily works in the middle of the football field. All of your guys kind of do that except for J-Mo currently. And I start to wonder how diversified your passing game can be with so many guys who ideally work best in that middle of the field. So that's kind of why I say, yes, there's a lot of talent in the wide receiver room, in this draft, but I don't think there's nearly as many when you start looking at just purely outside guys. I think that list starts to shrink much quicker. Round by round.
I think I have like maybe 10 guys of those like 21. I think maybe less than half of them can probably play the X in the way the Lions want them to, right? And then when you drop after that into day three, there might be like two. Like that's really
Yeah,
how
and
it
it,
is, right?
yeah,
So if you're
and I
looking
think.
for a bigger body, you almost have to dip in the top 100 picks.
Yeah, and I think the question you posed is very fair because the Lions are very much not set into running one style of offense. I think they feel very confident in both Jared Goff and Ben Johnson to be able to craft an offense that, helps this offense continue to operate at a high level. But I do just think like on paper, it would be a little more appealing, I guess, just to look at, or a little more
Sure.
believable that, like, hey, this offense can be multifaceted because you have guys that can play on the outside, and you have a couple guys that can play on the inside. One thing that concerns me if they don't get an X early, kind of like how we're saying, like, by the time you get to day three, you're probably looking at two guys. This quickly starts to not look like the Amon-Ra St. Brown method because obviously they were able to get Amon-Ra
Sure,
on day
sure.
three. But we also got to remember they just needed wide receiver help. It wasn't like specifically like, hey, we need an X or we need a Z. Like they needed receivers, period. And
Yeah.
Amon-Ra was able to kind of facilitate that need perfectly because he can play inside and outside, but where they have him operating now primarily is at the slot for the most part. And he's probably without question the best slot receiver in the NFL right now.
Oh, yeah. And I think they're using him more outside too, which lends itself, I think, to an opportunity to maybe add a guy who has some slot experience. Like they're splitting Amon-Ra's, his snaps are closer to like 50-50 inside outside than they were in previous years. And some of that is because when they go to two wide receiver sets, he's always out there. You know what I mean? But he is getting more experience on the outside. But again, I agree with your statement of he's more productive over the middle, just like Sam's more productive over the middle. And so JMO's, your outside threat. You don't really. So what you kind of need is you need a guy who can be your fourth option, maybe your fifth option in the passing game, but I can also be a bigger body guy who can stretch outside and then, but then also like give you some over the middle stuff like you got from Josh Reynolds. Now, most of the X's are going to be like guys you probably need to take in the first round. But mm-hmm. if you're taking a guy in the first round, is it worth taking a wide receiver in the first round if that guy is going to be fourth or fifth in your pecking order? I don't know. Well, but so then, right. like, if you're like, yeah, so now if you're like, oh, well, let's just take him a guy, an X in two in round two. Well, your options are more limited now if you're taking them in two. You only have a couple of guys, and maybe they're not natural X's, kind of like Josh Reynolds was not really a natural X, right? He just had to kind of play that role. Well, not that's kind of the guys that you're getting into. And while round three probably has more pure X guys, those are guys that also have big question marks around them too. So you kind of run into the same kind of like value concept or problem where, you're asking how important is this need? Am I looking for this certain type of guy? And what am I willing to pay to grab a guy at what level considering where he's probably going to fall in the pecking order? And so it's a tough question. I think edge and wide receiver are two of the toughest positions in this draft class to kind of pigeonhole what the Lions are looking for, which is why I wanted to, this is the ones that we wanted to talk about today.
Yeah. And I think it also kind of goes hand in hand with the fact of the way that Brad Holmes and this, regime kind of goes about drafting is it's not even just a matter of like, hey, is it worth spending a pick on this position? Because obviously last year showed us they don't really care too much about that. If they, it more so comes down to, is this the best player that's on the board when it's our pick? And I think that's where things get really tricky, Eric, is because there's a even better likelihood that when the Lions are picking at 29 or even potentially at 61, that the best player on the board is not an edge or a wide receiver.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. And they're not going to reach. Yeah, they're not going to reach.
And they're not going to reach. If the best player on the board is an offensive lineman, again, that need doesn't seem nearly as high as, X receiver or
not,
pass
yeah, not
rusher
in the
opposite
immediate.
Aiden Hubbard.
Yeah.
Right.
But long term, it's a need, but yeah.
But yeah, but it's a long term. And so I could very well see the Lions looking at their board and, a guy like Keon Coleman is sitting there that they could take at 29, but they're just like, hey, we don't have him rated nearly as high as we have a Jackson Power Johnson or a Graham Barton, a Walt Frazier, or Zach Frazier.
Zach Frazier, yep.
I was going to say Walt Frazier, and I think that's a basketball player for the Knicks. But yeah, like a Zach Frazier, and it's just like, yeah, like Keon Coleman is a great wide receiver, but he's not. We don't have him rated as a high enough player, football player, as some of these offensive linemen. And that's the thing that I think is where, like, again, I would be fine with it. It just becomes a matter of there's only so many more rounds that I think you would start looking at where you're just like, well, if the Lions don't start getting a wide receiver by this point, it's probably not happening this draft.
Yeah, they took they went out last year and they used one of their last picks on Antoine Green. And we don't really think too much about him, but they carried him on the roster all year for a reason. They've been developing him for a reason. There's also a reason he wasn't playing, because he wasn't quite there yet. But this is a guy who kind of can fit that X role and maybe you push him. So like if the Lions don't get a receiver, if they just pass on their receivers, you still have him and Peoples Jones who you can try putting against each other in a rotation. You can always mix Khalif Raymond into that mix too, because Khalif's played outside before as well. It's not ideal, but he's highly productive. Or you play Khalif in the slot and you kick Amon-Ra outside for situationally, right? And And you end up using that like third wide receiver role as kind of a rotational thing. And it's not ideal. You'd like to have your starter, but it's not like if the Lions don't get a receiver, the cupboard is bare. Yes, they'd have to make a move in free agency probably. But you know, they have some options. But I agree. If they want a receiver, the X seems the most likely. I'm not sure if they'd limit themselves to just an X, just because I think of how they're creative enough and how they think. At the same time, I don't think they're going to take a guy who spent like over 50% of his snaps in the slot, right? Like, for example, I love Roman Wilson. I didn't want I wasn't going to get into players, but I love Roman Wilson. I think he is a tremendous player. He would be great in this offense. But Roman Wilson played 92% of his snaps in the slot. You're not going to teach Roman to play outside immediately. Like, that's not how it works. You'd have to play Amon-Ra outside and bring Roman on as your slot and slowly work him up into being able to play outside. But that's not going to be something that happens as a rookie. Like, he would be your slot. And so I do think like a guy like Roman is not going to be as high, even though I think the talent is there. He's probably not going to be as high on like the Lions board. And there's a handful of guys like that. Like, I know people really like Ricky Purcell. He played almost 60% of his snaps in the slot. And so again, I don't know how high he's going to be. Malachi Corey. I love Malachi Corey.
Another really, yeah, another
Eight,
player that a lot of people
84%.
like.
Yeah, 84% of his snaps in the slot. Like, I don't know how that fits. And so there's a bunch of guys who I like really like their talent, but I'm like, man, I don't know how you're not going to teach them to play outside. And the where I'm even if Amon-Ra was only playing 50% of his snaps in the slot, there's only going to be so many snaps, and you're not drafting the guy in the first or second round if you're only going to play him like 30% of your snaps, because that's all that's available in the slot, right? So like a guy like Roman Wilson, as much as I love him, he's probably not going to be the Lions' second round pick. And Malachi Corey's probably not going to be, you know, a day two pick for them, because again, it doesn't fit. But there's plenty of other guys that do. Keon Coleman, you mentioned, you know, was a good one. If they get out, if you're talking about even beyond Keon Coleman out of round one, like Troy Franklin,
Troy Franklin, Xavier Leggett is a good
Xavier
one. Again,
Leggett,
and
he, yeah.
Leggett is probably, again, if we're talking about guys that feel like a fit for the Lions, Leggett is probably the one
Yes.
that feels the most because he has so much versatility. So to your point about like, hey, maybe not being penciled in strictly as an X, but like, hey, we can move you around. We can
Yes,
keep this
100%.
offense somewhat fluid. That's where a guy like Xavier Leggett fits in. That's where a guy like Ladd McConkey kind of fits in, where
Yes,
it's like
yes,
those
yes.
guys are versatile enough in an offense to where, hey, there is no quote unquote X receiver on this roster. We rotate our receivers around.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Leggett, it makes a ton of sense. If he's there in round two, I think that's an easy pick. So we'll see. Maybe he's there in round three, the way the rumors are with him, and the way that people are like, oh, the league isn't as high as everyone else is, and he's gonna slide. Oh, go ahead. Let him slide. Let him slide
I was
all the
gonna
way
say,
to, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I'm perfectly fine with it. The Lions have benefited from that the last couple of drafts. So yeah, let
Yeah.
another talented, football player slide to 61 or what is it, 73 the Lions have in the third
73.
round.
Yep, 73. So like the other positions of need that the Lions kind of have, I mean, they could take upgrades at a lot of different spots, but I think they all react differently. I think the big with edge and wide receiver, like there's a very direct correlation between you almost have to take a guy early for what they're looking for at edge and
Yes.
wide receiver, or you might just not look at them at all. Whereas like a position like offensive line, offensive tackle, and interior, those are guys that you don't need to start. You don't need to be contributors. Like, you can take them early and have a great sixth guy and a guy you can spot start, or you can take guys that you can develop. You can it's safety. You don't need a guy that can start. Well, that's a good thing, because there's not a lot of them in this class anyways.
I was
And
going to
so
say, yeah,
like
that's another group that like it starts to dry up fairly quickly.
Yeah, and I there's look, there's guys that I like, and there's probably more guys that I like than I don't. But these it's I don't know, I might have 5, 6, 7 guys that I think go in the top 100 max. Maybe not even that. And then it's just you get situational really, really, really fast at safety. Linebacker, they're not going to take a linebacker any in the first three rounds, in my opinion, both from a value standpoint and a talent standpoint. I think defensive tackle is reflective, just like edge, where you have a couple really, really talented guys at the top, and then it starts to starts to drop off in a similar manner. So you know that whole edge. We talked a lot about edge, but the defensive tackle kind of fits into that same ballpark, right? It's the same kind of. You got to get the guy early, and then it tapers off after that. And then if they take a tight end, like it's or a running back, those are like late day three type things where you're adding guys for a specific role. So I think that's one of the reasons why edge, defensive tackle, offensive line, wide receiver, those are the ones we keep talking about, because one, they have very specific needs in those areas for very specific types of guys that kind of fit into their systems. And then also the talent perspective, there's talent that all the talent is really high, are going to be really high in the class. And if you don't get them, then you're in the first like two rounds, then it's situational and you can almost wait. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Those two positions to me have always kind of been my, if I've ever done a mock draft or if I've ever like talked, you know, when I think about how they attack the draft, those are always the two positions where it's like, I might end my mock and be like, oh, I didn't take a receiver, or, oh, I didn't take an edge guy. You know what I mean? But like, you can always find these value guys at some of these other positions because the talent matches where you get them. And it's not like that at receiver and edge. They're a little bit different animals this year.
Yeah, I think the last couple of mocks that I've even ran, I've tried purposely, like, how late can I get a quality receiver that I would feel good about? And it's tough. I think, like, the only receiver that I've tried to wait till, like, the sixth round or so to get one. And if Cornelius Johnson's around, like, okay, I feel good about that.
I like Cornelius as a day three X. Like, he's one of those couple of guys. I'm with you.
Yeah. And I think he would fit a role very specific to what we were talking about. We're like, hey, we need you to run a couple of deep routes here and there just to kind of clear out space. Maybe you get targeted a couple of times, but really we just need you to go out there and you know, run a couple for the love of the game type routes, at the very least. Edge gets tough. Like, Edge is one of those where, like, I've had a couple of mocks where I'm just like, yeah, I didn't take one, right? I didn't want to take one in the first three rounds. So I just didn't take one, and I'm just going to continue to trust that Josh Pascal is going to be healthy, that Marcus Davenport is going to be healthy, you know, and maybe they find somebody, you know, as a you know, undrafted free agent that they want to invest in.
It's a very deep roster. It's as deep of a roster as I've ever seen. At the same time, like any roster, there's ways to upgrade. There's positions that you want, that you're always going to want more depth at, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even talk about corner. I mean, but like,
well, like corner. Like,
yeah. It's go ahead.
It's been a while since the Lions like truly invested in corner, in my opinion. Right. Mm-hmm. Like in my opinion, I don't necessarily consider Brian. Like, I feel Brian Branch was a gift from God. Like, I don't even look at that as like a true investment into corner. It was just like, this amazing football player is still sitting here.
Yeah,
we're gonna go take him. But as far as like outside corner, if he was the last like true investment, in my opinion, in an outside corner, and he's now playing safety,
right?
And so I do feel like this is the draft where the Lions could and probably should invest into at least the future of the position, not even necessarily as like a current need, but in the same way we talk about offensive line of like, hey, it's solid. It's really good. Not even just solid. It's great. It's a great starting group, but you could still invest into some depth there. That's how I feel about corner, where it's like, it's a solid group. You could use some young talent to kind of learn from this veteran group that you've established. with Carlton Davis and Amik Robertson and Emmanuel Mosley.
I think you have like just a quick brief overview for I think you maybe have 10 corners who I like, who I think would challenge either for a rotation role or potentially starting role. I don't think any of those 10 make it to 73. So it's again, you're kind of in that similar boat where if you're not taking them in the first two rounds, you're hoping to find a St. Brown somewhere after that. And there's some guys that I like, you know, after that for or after the first two rounds. And there's guys that I think would be very good depth players, but it's again, it's edge, receiver, corner. Like, don't know how
I
they're
like the
not gonna get
corner
all
depth.
three. Yeah,
I
I
like the
think
corner
cornerback is
depth.
better. Yes, for sure.
Yeah. I like corner is again, we were talking about like what our mock drafts kind of look like sometimes when we have them.
Sure,
Corner is
sure.
one of those positions where I sometimes double dip, where like I'll get a guy
Yeah, you. I can
fairly
see.
early and then I'll try to get someone again in the sixth round possibly. Because I think there's because of the way that the Lions, cornerback room or secondary room is currently set up, I think you just could afford to have a couple of those pieces where you're just like, hey, this guy has, the play style that we like. Let's just see if, he can turn out to be a better version of Jerry Jacobs. Let's see if we can kind of get him in to be competitive at that position. And maybe in a year or two, he's pushing for starter quality snaps. The top of the cornerback, group in this draft speaks for itself. But then I think once you kind of get into, guys like Kalen Carson, I really like Nehemiah Pritchard. I really like Renardo Green. I love like that's a if the Lions can get him, I think that's a guy to your point. That's one of those guys that I think that could honestly challenge for a starting spot. Like I think he's that talented.
He's probably the only guy, in my opinion, that you might be able to get in round three that could challenge.
Yeah.
I feel confident saying that. I think
Yeah,
you
but I
might
mean,
be able to get him in round three. Might. He might go in round two, but I like him quite a bit.
yeah, and so much like offensive line, the cornerback in the NFL, as far as the NFL draft goes, is another one of those positions where you see guys get picked in the fifth, sixth round, and they end up being like these, all not maybe not all pro all the time, but Pro Bowl caliber corners later in the league, just because they got into the right system, they got the
Sure, sure,
right,
sure.
defense or right coach, and they just continue to establish themselves in the league. So again, if you can get one of the more talented guys near the top, awesome. But I think there's also some guys later in this class that could possibly develop really well with this Lions defense.
Lions have six corners, second rounder, fourth rounder, and the rest are undrafted. Like that's, you can find guys at different spots, right? I, in my opinion, the way I see this class, first and second rounders are guys that I think can challenge on the outside. After that, outside of if Renardo Green slides into the third, outside of that, they're almost all nickels to me. Guys that I find myself liking are mostly nickels. Like I'm like, oh, I like this guy. Oh, he's probably gonna be a nickel though. Oh, I like this guy. He's probably gonna be a nickel. But in all honesty, that's a position of need. They don't really have a nickel, and so beyond the backup branch. And so, if you're going to double dip, I would say there are some options, some nickel options on day three, or even maybe in the third round, that would be very nice backups for Brian Branch. You could maybe you develop them and see if they can do more. But I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with double dipping a corner just because they need to add more youth at the position. So, but again, if you want a guy to challenge on the outside, in my opinion, you got to go in the first two rounds. If you want an edge rusher who can challenge for a big key role, you probably got to go in the first rounds. If you want a wide receiver X, you'll be lucky to find one in round three. And so, you can't get all of them unless
No.
unless you trade back, and then you end up with three second day three picks. But yeah, it's in the current setting how they are now, something's going to give. And they're going to end up with one position that maybe isn't as and who knows, if they go defensive tackle, then there may be two positions where they end up maybe not having exactly what they want, but they'll make do and they'll adjust, and they'll adjust the scheme, and they'll adjust how they approach things, and they'll find a way. That's what they do. And I think the coaching staff has proven that.
Yeah. All right. And I think that's the good thing that about, you know, the way the roster is currently set up, like you were saying earlier,
Yeah.
right? It's
Yeah.
it's as well-rounded as it's probably been in a long time. And so if the Lions decide to go in a different direction, or decide not to, you know, address a certain position as early as we think they should, it's not going to make or break this roster. Like you said, they'll adjust
Lots
the
of
scheme.
flexibility.
Yeah, and they'll be in a good position to still win plenty of football games.
I'm with you, man. I feel like we're nitpicking. You know what I mean? Like we're like, oh, we're talking about
We've
things we
arrived,
want them to
Eric.
do.
We've arrived as a winning franchise, and this is the benefit of being that type of franchise. You get to nitpick a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, man, because we're talking about guys that like might not even start, and we're like, yeah, they probably got to get this guy, or they're going to be missing it, and we're talking about rotational players,
Yeah.
potentially, and that's I mean that speaks to the team. All right, I think, well, we covered a lot more than we thought, and I think this is probably going to be the longest short podcast I've done in this setting.
And I've lived up to my reputation, at least, at the very least, I've lived up to being as long-winded as people who probably know me know I am.
Well, you know, the problem is we could spend an hour talking about just one position group, right? And we were trying to cover multiple position groups. I think we our eyes were bigger than our mouths in this situation. Well, our mouths were bigger than our eyes. I mean, like, we talked a lot more than we probably were anticipating or hoping.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, look, I think it was a good conversation.
I think your audience will be happy with it. I'm hoping I
Oh,
brought
I do
plenty of
too.
value.
I completely agree. And yeah, I definitely think that the feedback I will get will be very positive in asking for more longer episodes. The trick becomes I'm trying to get Ryan on for another show. And then maybe two, depending on how long-winded we are.
I
And
feel like
then,
at some point in time, this is just going to become competitive amongst the staff of who can
well,
hold you the longest on
well,
one topic.
the problem is that I, they don't, it, it wouldn't, some, like, there's some guys who have podcasted with me for a long time, and they know how to manipulate me. They know how to egg me on to keep me going. So I think Jeremy and Ryan would be really good at just like continuing to let me talk, and then it's 2 hours later and I'm wondering why my wife is wondering where I'm at, right? So
Well, I'm at least happy to hold the belt for now for as long as I
well,
possibly can.
certainly.
Ryan is more than welcome to challenge for the spot.
I think Ryan has a couple of ideas he wants to get out. And like I said, I'm going to have Ryan on before the draft. I'm going to have a big Joe and I will do our draft preview show, which is going to be pretty big. I will try and keep that one under 2 hours as best I can, but there's a lot to talk about. And then after the draft, I have some ideas, and I'm trying to work something out for some recap type podcasts. And then
okay.
I also want to try and keep some of these going in the weeks after the draft as well, as long as I can. And we'll see how it goes. I've tried to do as many of these as I can before the draft. Maybe the draft will slow down a little bit, but I know the fan base is definitely starving for content. So I appreciate you joining me, buddy. Very thoughtful of you to give me this much time. I don't think you were very long-winded. I think you gave me the appropriate length of answers. I feel like I was more long-winded, so maybe that's just us being critical, self-critical of ourselves.
Listen,
But
anytime I can, you know, match brevity with someone else, like this is going to be a good time. So I appreciate you taking the time to even ask me to have me on.
Of course. Of course.
And yeah, I look forward to having more conversations even after the draft, because Lord knows there's so much football to talk about even after the draft.
Oh,
Things are
there's
only going
gonna
to
be a
ramp up
ton.
even more.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, we could talk once we find out more about these players and we get info on them and we start talking about fits, like we do hour on each player at this point, I feel like. So we'll see how many they get and how many more hours of podcasting we'll have for everybody. So thank you, Miko. And until next time, let's go Lions.